This is the Indo-Pacific Debrief by Atlas News. Hello, and welcome to the Indo-Pacific Debrief by Atlas News, where we take the region's top stories and analyze and review their broader context. Starting off, in Myanmar, simmering tensions between the military junta, known as the State Administration Council, SAC, and various ethnic armed groups have flared up again due to the recent activation of a conscription law by the SAC. This podcast episode dives into the statements released by three prominent ethnic groups, the Karen National Union, KNU, the Restoration Council of Shan State, Shan State Army South, RCSS, SSA, and the Chin National Front, CNF, and analyzes their positions on the conscription law. The KNU strongly condemned the law, arguing that the SAC lacks the legitimacy to implement it. They believe the true purpose of the law is to bolster the military's dwindling manpower due to battlefield losses and defections, not to protect the nation as the SAC claims. The KNU urged the public to resist the law through various means, including political activism and joining resistance forces. They emphasized that the only way to end the regime's oppression is to overthrow the military dictatorship. The RCSS-SSA, however, took a different approach. They announced their own military service policy, effectively implementing a rival conscription system within their territory. This policy targets individuals between 18 and 45, similar to the SAC's law, but with a longer service term of 6 years. Interestingly, the RCSS-SSA claims their law only applies within Shan State and doesn't recognize the SAC's authority in this region. They also established measures to deter individuals from evading conscription, including property confiscation. Notably, the RCSS and SSA maintains that they still uphold the 2015 Nationwide Ceasefire Agreement, NCA, with the SAC and continue dialogue with them. The CNF, like the KNU, expressed strong opposition to the SAC's conscription law. They see it as forced recruitment and believe the conscripts will be used as cannon fodder or porters for the military. They urge Chin people eligible for conscription to instead join forces in building Chinland, suggesting a desire to create a self-governing region. While these statements showcase diverse reactions to the conscription law, some common threads emerge. All three groups appear wary of being drawn deeper into the wider conflict. The KNU and CNF directly criticize the SAC's motivations and actions. However, the RCSS-SSA attempts to maintain a semblance of neutrality by implementing their own system while still engaging with the SAC via the NCA. It's important to note that the SAC likely lacks the military power to force these groups to comply with their conscription law. Additionally, the similarities between the SAC's and RCSS-SSA's laws in terms of eligibility and age groups suggest an attempt by the RCSS-SSA to protect their people and resources from being drawn into the conflict. Next, Tuvalu Parliament set to elect new Prime Minister, Feleti Teofivorid. Tuvalu's political landscape is gearing up for a crucial vote as the remaining members of Parliament, MPs, arrive in the capital, Funafuti, to elect the country's new Prime Minister. This podcast episode delves into the upcoming vote, potential candidates, and the international implications surrounding the election. Originally scheduled for earlier, the vote was postponed due to challenging weather conditions that hindered travel for some MPs. With the final two MPs from Nanamia expected to arrive soon, the parliament can finally convene to elect the new leader. The government explored the possibility of holding the vote in a hybrid format, allowing participation from MPs unable to travel due to distance. However, the governor general ultimately opted for an in-person vote due to improved weather conditions. Among the campaigning MPs, Feleti Teo, a former government official, appears to be the frontrunner. He secured support from 12 out of 16 MPs by building a coalition across the previous government and opposition members. Teo's potential election as prime minister is likely to maintain Tuvalu's existing diplomatic ties with Taiwan. This is a significant concern for Taiwan, as some other Pacific Island nations have recently switched their recognition to China. Notably, Finance Minister Seve Payeni, a potential challenger to Teo, expressed openness to reviewing Tuvalu's relationship with China if elected. China's increasing efforts to sway Taiwan's remaining allies, including Nauru's recent switch of recognition, raise concerns about potential pressure on Tuvalu. However, Tao's perceived pro-Taiwan stance suggests a continuation of the current relationship. Despite the challenges faced, Tuvalu is on the verge of electing its new leader. Feletti Teo's strong coalition and pro-Taiwan stance are likely to lead to his victory, ensuring continuity in Tuvalu's foreign policy. While China is likely to continue its influence operations in the region, Teo's leadership will likely maintain the established diplomatic ties between Tuvalu and Taiwan. This vote holds significance not only for Tuvalu's domestic politics, but also for the broader geopolitical landscape in the Asia-Pacific region. Next, we explore the recent events in Dije County, Kardzi Tibetan Autonomous Prefecture, where over 1,000 Tibetans were arrested following protests against the Gangtuo Kamtok Hydroelectric Dam project. On February 14th, protests erupted in Dije County as monks, nuns, and villagers voiced their opposition to the dam project. Their grievances stemmed from concerns about forced relocations and the potential destruction of 6 historically significant monasteries. The protests continued for several days, with individuals gathering near monasteries, villages, and even the Dije County government building. Some reports indicate clashes with police and arrests as tensions escalated. On February 22nd and 23rd, Chinese authorities responded with a large-scale crackdown, arresting over 1,000 individuals, including monks, nuns, and ordinary citizens. The detainees are reportedly being held in various locations across the county, with reports suggesting they are forced to bring their own supplies, potentially indicating a prolonged detention period. Additionally, authorities reportedly cut off internet and phone services and confiscated cell phones, aiming to restrict information flow and prevent news of the crackdown from going beyond the region.
The project's location, along the Drichu-Jinsha River, is slated to flood 2 villages and 6 monasteries, displacing residents and threatening these cultural and religious landmarks.
The local population expresses anger and frustration over the lack of consultation and consent regarding the project. They fear the destruction of their homes and the loss of centuries-old monasteries, which hold significant cultural and historical value. Analysts suggest that the dam project serves a broader purpose beyond energy generation. The targeted location and potential destruction of the monasteries are seen as an attempt to erode Tibetan cultural and religious identity. Kham, the traditional region where the dam is being built, holds historical significance for Tibetans, and the destruction of these monasteries is perceived as a systematic effort to sever the local population's connection to their heritage. This aligns with concerns about the Chinese government's broader strategy to assimilate Tibetan culture into the dominant Han Chinese culture. The situation in Dije County highlights the complex dynamics at play in the region. While the dam project aims to address China's energy needs, it comes at a significant cost to the local Tibetan people and their cultural heritage. The mass arrests and information restrictions raise concerns about human rights violations and the suppression of dissent in the region. Now, a recent letter sent by the United States House of Representatives Select Committee on China to Elon Musk, CEO of SpaceX. The letter raises concerns about the lack of access to Starshield, a satellite internet system, for U.S. military personnel in and around Taiwan. The letter, co-authored by the committee's chairman and ranking member, requests clarification from Musk regarding Starshield's unavailability in the region. The committee emphasizes the system's potential significance, highlighting its potential role in safeguarding U.S. interests during a potential conflict between China and Taiwan. The letter outlines the critical role Starshield could play in ensuring secure communication for U.S. personnel in Taiwan. It emphasizes Taiwan's strategic importance to the U.S. and its allies, including its role as a centerpiece of the First Island Chain, a key defense line against China. Additionally, the letter mentions China's ongoing threats towards Taiwan and its increased air incursions into Taiwan's Air Defense Identification Zone, ADIs. While the letter acknowledges the lack of clarity regarding the specific reasons behind Starshield's unavailability, it speculates on potential factors influencing this decision. One possibility is that SpaceX, wary of escalating tensions with China, might be concerned about the potential consequences of enabling U.S. military use of the system in Taiwan. This rationale aligns with Musk's previous limitations on Starlink usage in the ongoing Ukraine conflict. The episode delves into an analysis of this potential rationale, suggesting it might be flawed. The analysis argues that China is unlikely to significantly escalate tensions solely due to Starshield's presence in Taiwan, considering its broader economic and strategic interests. Additionally, it suggests that China might resort to more subtle tactics, such as leveraging influence operations to exert pressure on SpaceX and Taiwan. The situation surrounding Starshield's availability in Taiwan highlights the complex interplay between private companies, national security interests, and geopolitical tensions. The lack of access raises questions about the potential limitations of relying on commercially owned communication systems in critical regions. The committee's inquiry underscores the need for open communication and collaboration between the government, private sector, and allies to ensure robust communication capabilities in strategically important locations. Next, Papua New Guinea, kidnapping and the complexities of the highlands. In today's episode, we'll delve into the recent kidnapping of an Australian pilot and two local workers in Papua New Guinea's Hela province. This incident, while concerning, raises important questions about the complex realities of the region. Papua New Guinea authorities reported the abduction of the individuals who were taken at gunpoint by unidentified men near a remote telecommunications site. This event bears a disturbing resemblance to a similar kidnapping last year, where an Australian archaeologist and two researchers were held captive for a week before being released upon ransom payment. No ransom demands have been reported in the current case, but the possibility remains. To understand the context of this event, we must delve into the complexities of Papua New Guinea's highlands. This region is characterized by numerous, sometimes competing, tribes. These communities often possess weapons acquired through theft or purchased from law enforcement, creating a volatile environment where hostage taking for potential ransom becomes a concern. Just recently, a clash between tribes in Enga province, another highland region, resulted in a significant loss of life, highlighting the ongoing security challenges. Regulating the flow of illegal firearms throughout the country is another critical aspect to consider. Allegations of involvement in the illegal arms trade by members of parliament and former officials further complicate the issue. Addressing this problem necessitates a multi-pronged approach, encompassing stricter border controls, improved law enforcement, and community engagement to address the root causes of conflict and violence. The safe and swift return of the abducted individuals remains the primary concern. However, this incident serves as a stark reminder of the multifaceted challenges faced by Papua New Guinea, particularly in its highland regions. Now we'll discuss a recent joint letter sent by the Australian and New Zealand ambassadors to the United States, urging Congress to prioritize the renewal of the Compact of Free Association, MONCOFA, with three Pacific Island nations. COFI is an agreement between the United States, the Marshall Islands, the Federated States of Micronesia, and the Republic of Palau. This agreement offers the island nations security guarantees, the U.S. pledges to defend these nations if they are attacked. Funding. The U.S. provides financial assistance to support their development, other forms of assistance. This can include educational opportunities and disaster relief. In return, the United States gains exclusive rights. The U.S. has the sole right to build and maintain military bases in these strategic locations. Why is COFA important? The ambassadors highlight the vital role COFA plays in maintaining mutual economic, diplomatic, and security interests. The agreement benefits all parties involved, fostering stability and regional cooperation. Strategic presence. COFA strengthens the U.S. and its allies, like Australia and New Zealand, influence in the Pacific, countering potential competitors like China. The urgency for renewal. The ambassadors emphasize the potential consequences of delaying the COFA renewal. Increased vulnerability. The island nations could face economic and security challenges without continued U.S. support. Damaged reputation. The U.S. could lose its standing as a reliable partner in the region. Wider regional impact. China could exploit the situation to expand its influence in the Pacific, potentially disrupting the existing security architecture. Australia and New Zealand's concerns. The letter underscores the anxieties of both nations. Strategic dependence. Australia and New Zealand rely on the COFA nation's location for trade routes and defense planning. Chinese influence. They fear that China might fill the void left by the U.S., potentially leading to increased Chinese influence in the islands. This could complicate regional security arrangements. Loss of U.S. access to strategic locations. This could weaken the collective defense capabilities of the U.S., Australia, and New Zealand. The joint letter highlights the critical role of the COFA renewal in maintaining stability and security in the Pacific. The concerns raised by Australia and New Zealand underscore the potential consequences of inaction and the need for the U.S. to prioritize the renewal process to ensure continued cooperation and a strong regional presence. Next, the disappearances and downfalls of China's former defense and foreign ministers, an unfolding story. In a recent turn of events, China's political landscape has seen the resignations and removals of two key figures, former Foreign Minister Qin Gang and former Defense Minister Li Shangfu. Both men served in the highest echelons of power before disappearing from public view in mid-2023, only to reemerge in February 2024 under unusual circumstances. Qin Gang seemingly vanished from public life in June 2023. Just weeks later, in July, he was officially removed from his position as foreign minister. He later relinquished his state councillor position in October. His disappearance and subsequent removals sparked numerous rumors, ranging from personal indiscretions to involvement in espionage. Notably, on February 27, 2024, Qin's resignation as a member of the National People's Congress, NPC, was accepted. While the NPC did not explicitly dismiss or remove him, the resignation further complicates the situation. Former Defense Minister Li Shangfu followed a similar path. He disappeared in August 2023 and was subsequently removed from his positions as State Councillor, Defense Minister, and member of the Central Military Commission, CMC, in October. Like Qin, Li's disappearance fueled speculation, with accusations of corruption and internal power struggles within the military surfacing. Both Qin and Li's situations remain shrouded in uncertainty. Their resignations and removals suggest an ongoing investigation by the Central Commission for Discipline Inspection, CCDI. However, the details of this investigation and the potential charges against them are yet to be revealed. The manner in which they stepped down offers some clues. Qin's resignation from the NPC suggests a complete loss of formal authority, potentially paving the way for expulsion from the CCP and subsequent legal proceedings. Notably, however, the local committee accepted his resignation, indicating he may no longer be deemed important enough for higher authorities to handle the matter. This also suggests a potential informal loss of party membership. Li's removal from the CMC signifies a complete severance from the military hierarchy. However, he retains his positions as an NPC member, a general in the PLA, and a member of the CCP's Central Committee. This could indicate that the investigation into him is more complex and requires more time to uncover all associated individuals. The situation surrounding Qin and Li remains a developing story with many unanswered questions. While their disappearances, removals, and resignations offer some insights, it is crucial to remain cautious of speculation and await official information from the Chinese government. The upcoming two sessions, China's annual parliamentary meetings, may shed further light on the ongoing investigations and provide a clearer picture of these developments. Next, Philippines accused China of jamming communications in South China Sea, a heating dispute. Tensions are rising in the South China Sea as the Philippines accuses China of jamming communication signals and using gray zone tactics to assert its territorial claims. Let's delve into the recent events and analyze the situation. Philippine concerns, jamming and impeding operations.
On February 27th, the Philippine Navy, PN and Coast Guard PCG reported experiencing electronic interference or jamming during operations in the South China Sea.
Commodore Roy Trinidad, PN spokesperson, stated that the jamming aimed to disrupt resupply missions to Philippine-held features in the disputed waters. He emphasized that the jamming, though ongoing for several years, did not significantly impact their navigation systems. The PCG echoed these concerns, with Commodore Ajay Tariela claiming China jammed the automatic identification system ICE off their vessels. This system transmits critical information about a vessel's location and identity, crucial for safety and monitoring purposes. The jamming hindered the transmission of this vital information. The Philippines believe China employs jamming as part of a broader strategy to support their territorial claims. They suspect China jams communication signals during Philippine patrols and resupply missions too. By jamming AIS and communication signals, China potentially aims to delay or prevent the Philippines and other countries from monitoring their activities in the region. This allows them to control the narrative surrounding the events, as seen in their swift release of a statement claiming to have repelled a Philippine vessel after the February 22nd jamming incident. Disrupting communication could hinder the Philippines' ability to coordinate their operations and potentially deter them from asserting their claims in the disputed territories. The February 22nd incident marked a potential escalation. The PCG reported that a Chinese Coast Guard vessel blocked their ship while a People's Liberation Army Navy PLAN helicopter hovered nearby, jamming the vessel's AIS signal. This incident suggests China may be deploying helicopters for jamming operations signifies a potential shift in China's approach, potentially aiming to increase their capabilities and reach. Utilizing helicopters under the Coast Guard's command allows China to enhance their presence in the region without directly violating international law, while potentially gaining access to additional weaponry the Coast Guard helicopters lack. The situation in the South China Sea remains complex and fluid. The Philippines' accusations highlight growing tensions as China employs various tactics, including communication jamming and gray zone activities, to assert its territorial claims. While the full extent of China's motives and future actions remains unclear, it is evident that the dispute in the South China Sea continues to be a point of contention with potentially escalating consequences. Finally, India and Mauritius strengthen ties with new joint base in the Indian Ocean. India and Mauritius recently took a significant step in strengthening their strategic partnership with the inauguration of a new joint airbase and pier on the island of Agalega. This development carries significant implications for both countries and the broader geopolitical landscape of the Indian Ocean. Located approximately 2,237 miles south of India, Agalega offers a strategic vantage point in the southwestern Indian Ocean. Both prime ministers, Narendra Modi of India and Pravind Kumar Jugnauth of Mauritius, emphasize the base's role in bolstering regional maritime security. This includes deterring piracy, drug trafficking, and potential security threats. The base provides a platform for joint operations and training between the Indian and Mauritian defense forces, fostering closer cooperation and strengthening their collective capabilities. India played a major role in constructing the base's key infrastructure, including a 10,000-foot runway, hangars, barracks, and an 850-foot pier. India's P-8I maritime patrol aircraft could be deployed to Agalega on a rotational basis, enabling them to conduct extensive surveillance patrols in the region. This would include monitoring the critical Mozambique Channel and the East African coastline, potentially deterring piracy and tracking potential submarine activity. While Jugnauth emphasized the base's primary purpose wouldn't be offensive, India has the potential to deploy fighter jets like MiG-29s, Su-30 MKIs, and Rafales to Agalega on a rotational basis. This would demonstrate India's ability to project power in the surrounding region. Jugnauth reiterated that Mauritius retains ultimate control over the facility, raising questions about India's operational flexibility. Permission would be required for India to utilize the base in any capacity. China could potentially exert influence on Mauritius through economic and political means, impacting their decisions regarding the base's usage. This could restrict India's access and hinder its ability to project power in the region. China might also seek to gain similar access to the base in the future, potentially posing strategic challenges for India. The inauguration of the joint base in Agalega signifies a significant step forward for India and Mauritius, solidifying their strategic partnership and bolstering their combined maritime security capabilities. However, uncertainties surrounding operational control and potential external influence highlight the complex geopolitical realities of the Indian Ocean. This has been the Indo-Pacific Debrief by Atlas News.